if you're looking for a masterclass performance by an actress, this is the only movie that you should watch because, wow.
I think, and I know it's based on real people, but I think a more dramatic ending would have been a murder.
My other worry, this is an episode full of worries from me.
Oh, I can already picture her. She's already making me laugh in my mind.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we are talking about Funny Girl, because if you listened to our last episode, you would know that Steph and I have never seen maybe one of the most iconic movie musicals to date.
I know, it's pretty crazy that this was a huge blind spot for us.
Yeah.
So we had to correct it in advance of Funny Girl being revived on Broadway for the first time since its first production in 1964.
Yes. We will say right off the top that we are pre-recording this episode. At time of record, Funny Girl has not even started previews yet on Broadway. We're like 5 or so days out from previews. And we did this on purpose because we want to remain unbiased to any of the Broadway production and feel that everybody listening to this episode should be unbiased to the Broadway production until you get to see it, hopefully.
You're really going to be getting a newbie's experience with this episode.
Especially when we talk about some plot points, it's really a newbie's experience.
we were fresh. We were absolutely fresh going into this movie, and it made for very interesting, some interesting takes that we had.
Yeah. So to start this conversation off, as you said, very new to Funny Girl, some very fresh thoughts here, but what did you know of Funny Girl before we watched this movie?
Okay. I don't think as a millennial that you can talk about Funny Girl without talking about Glee.
Oh, totally.
Is that semi-embarrassing?
100%.
Yes.
I didn't fake it, Hatsa. Guess I didn't make it. Get ready for me, love, cause I'm a comer. I simply gotta march. My heart's a drummer. No, somebody don't know. Body.
However, probably my first exposure to music from Funny Girl was Lea Michele singing Don't Rain on My Parade on Glee. And then subsequently in season 5, which I actually don't think I watched at the time.
We watched it last night.
We watched it when we watched Funny Girl. Lea Michele's character, Rachel Berry, stars in a Broadway revival of Funny Girl as a plot point on the show Glee. So we see her sing Don't Rain on My Parade. We see Santana sing Don't Rain on My Parade. And we see her sing a few other songs, including Jane Lynch singing a song from Funny Girl, which is kind of funny.
The parallels.
Funny because now Jane Lynch is starring in this new Broadway revival.
And Leah's not.
Yeah, and well, she is not.
Yeah. I would agree. My very first venture into Funny Girl was Glee. Was that episode 1 that she sings Don't Rain on My Parade? No.
No. No.
I think it's like a Nationals or something?
I think it's the... Maybe it's season 2?
Yeah, it's pretty early in Glee's life. And then
yes, they have
Lea
to sing like a ballad. And she's like, I'll sing this. And then...
Yes. But it was kind of like alluded to that as soon as we met Rachel Berry, it was like, I'm going to be be Fanny Bryce.
She loved Barbara Streisand. Barbara Streisand was her icon. I think, and I think that's a great fit for like a Lea Michele too. And as much as you can say about Lea Michele, she does have the vocals.
Nails it. Like no one else can sing. I mean, people can sing like that, but no one else can sing like Lea can sing.
No, whatever you want to say about Lea, the vocals can never be criticized.
No, totally. But yeah, so I definitely remember like the sprinkles of the Funny Girl moments, the Fanny Bryce moments throughout Glee, her obviously singing Don't Rain on My Parade, her then singing Don't Rain on My Parade at the Tony Awards.
Right.
What did you say that was, 2010?
2010,
yeah.
Because I think 2009 is when Glee premiered and it was that first season.
Right.
And so maybe it was season 1. Wow.
Maybe.
Well, it doesn't matter. It was early in the show.
This is hilarious because I recently rewatched Glee and have no memory of when anything happened. But I will say.
I'm going to definitively say it was season 1.
Great. Someone correct us. I know you've all watched Glee. but I will say that, like you, I also was unaware of the Funny Girl on Broadway revival starring Rachel Berry because I didn't watch season 5 or 6 until last year. Like, that was the first time that I had seen those episodes. So watching her go through that and actually getting a Tony Award for that character is funny to me. But yeah, I watching this last night with you, I was like, I don't even know what this movie's about. I had like no idea.
No.
And the fact that like both my parents have obviously seen this movie many times and still have remained completely like blind to the plot was shocking to me.
Yes. I will say my other introduction, I think my actual introduction to it, because Don't Ride My Parade, it didn't occur to me that it was from a musical. That sounds dumb.
Sure.
But I am obsessed with Seth Rudetsky videos, and he did one where he deconstructed Julia Murney singing People at an Actors Fund benefit that Seth put on. And I watch them all. I watch every single one, even when I don't know the songs. And so I heard this one. I was like, what is this? Mm-hmm. And became obsessed with People from that. So that was post seeing Rachel sing Don't Run Away Parade on Glee, but it was when I first started to be slightly more interested in Funny Girl and like mm-hmm. listen to that song and like put her on the playlists. Mm-hmm. And still, you know, a smattering of songs were known before seeing the movie, but really I didn't know what was going to happen.
No.
Which was very clear once we started watching the movie.
I mean, let's get into it. So, what are your thoughts on Funny Girl?
Okay, well, number one, did not know it was about a real person.
Same.
Did not know it was about a real person.
Even as we were watching it, did not know that it was about
a real
person.
We're like on Wikipedia. Wait, is this a real person? A female comedian, Fanny Bryce, and her real con man gambler husband, Nick Arnstein. Mm-hmm. Many things. A lot of it was, they really just don't make movies like this anymore. When you go back and watch a movie made in the 60s, you see how many things are different in the way they make movies. There are such obvious things like starting with a 5-minute overture with a pitch black screen.
Okay, this was comedy to me because I referenced, you know, West Side Story, the original West Side Story. But in that one, there's like establishing shots of New York. No, this was literally like just pitch black.
Well, because we're watching it on Scener, right? Yeah. I was controlling the thing. You're like, it's not working. And I'm like, no, this is just the movie. It's just pitch black. Back screen.
Exactly.
For 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It was also 2 hours and 35 minutes. And now when you're watching something.
A moment for an intermission.
Right. Like a 3 or 4 minute intermission in the middle. Also black screen.
With the overture.
With, the entr'acte. If you will. But in movies or TV shows now, there's like 10 minutes of credits. The credits are so long.
Yes.
For this movie, 2 minutes of credits. So when I see 2:35, mentally, I'm like 2:25, but no, this was a true 2:35.
It was like 2:33 with 2 minutes of credits. Yeah.
Exactly. So overall thoughts on the actual movie. Barbara Streisand, a star, which we knew, but to get to see kind of her star-making vehicle, gorgeous. And this really just came across really as a vehicle for her to be mm-hmm. a star. And everything else in the movie, all the side characters were very underdeveloped. I think in order to make her be the star of this movie, and she is wonderful, perfect.
Yeah.
A performance that is so well matched to her. It's almost like when we think of Fanny Bryce, we don't think of the real person, we think of Barbara Streisand.
No, it's true. Also her first movie, which is crazy. Wild. Because obviously she had played the character on stage 4 years prior to the movie coming out, but to think that someone could hold an entire movie for 2.5 hours the way that she did, and that be her first ever project, wild. So it's clear that this movie, I feel, was made to, as you said, make her a star. And it did. Like, she has not left the scene since 1968. She's still a star. Yeah. And then I was looking up, like, the next year she had one for Hello Dolly, too. So her career was, like, on its feet as soon as she performed in this. I also think it's interesting that just looking at the movie, there are so many, like, pop culture references, I feel, to today. Like, the iconic pose of her, like, bob, sideways profile. Yes. Yeah, there's so many things that you're like, oh, that's from Funny Girl? I had no idea. The makeup in the 60s, like, she had such amazing makeup.
Her hair and makeup.
So things like that, like, you don't get stuff like that anymore. And then similar to what we were saying on our last episode, that overture, the underscoring of the songs, the huge brass, and I really hope that we're getting a full orchestra for the Broadway revival, because I think this show needs it. But we know, expensive money. But I do think that this show needs it. But yeah, like, this movie, it did not matter who else was there. It was for her. She is a star. We will talk about the musical a little bit later in this episode, because I'm a little concerned just based on watching this movie. But do you want to expose the plot point that we thought was going to happen?
So we're watching this movie, right? And Fanny Bryce falls in love with Nick Arnstein, a gambler, kind of a little bit of a con man. And he was sketching me out the whole movie. I was not getting good vibes from
him. Before we even knew that he was a gambler and a con man, you were like, no. Something's like, wrong here.
Something's off here. And about halfway through the movie, maybe a little more than that, I was getting the vibes that he was going to be murdered at the end of this movie. Which is crazy because, again, a real person. I was really like, this, he's got to die. There's no other way for this movie to end. Nick Arnstein, gotta die.
Yeah.
And then...
in like a gambling something gone wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah, he owed people money. Yeah. And then... he couldn't pay, and he didn't want to ask Fanny for the money, and then he was going to get murdered. Clearly that's not what happened. No. Spoiler alert for Funny Girl. Clearly he just goes to prison and they get divorced. Which I think, and I know it's based on real people, but I think a more dramatic ending would have been murder.
I also agree. For
it was really building up to it. The tension was there.
Yes. We haven't even mentioned, iconically played by Omar Sharif, Nick Arnstein, which... only, again, this is really gonna, like, age us here as the millennials that we are, but, like, I knew that he was an actor, but I'm like, oh, the guy from The Band's Visit that she sings.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I was like, oh, I'll finally see Omar Sharif in a movie. Yeah. I only know of him from the song.
Exactly. But something interesting to us too, as we were watching it, is, there are full 5-minute musical numbers in this movie that I do not think exist on stage. And
they might, though.
But not in the same way.
This musical number called His Love Makes Me Beautiful, which obviously ends in the joke of Fanny being a pregnant bride, which she kind of ad-libbed in the moment. And it made this song in the Ziegfeld Follies from being this, like, serious love song into a comedy number. But we got a full 5 minutes of this number before we ever saw her.
Yeah.
And we, as not knowing what the joke was going to be, I'm like, where is she?
Do we need this?
What's going on? I mean, I'm sure to see something like that on stage would be gorgeous. Because just thinking about the showgirls, the production value, the staging that they could do for it. But it felt long, especially when you're... as an audience, you're not being guided as to what this means or why it's important.
Something else that I thought was an interesting plot point, and I don't know that I necessarily liked it, is that the entire movie, per se, Fanny feels that she is not beautiful and, like, needs a man's love or anyone's love to feel beautiful.
She needs that approval from you know, agents, directors, the audience. Yeah. When she is clearly, like, gorgeous in this movie.
And I'm wondering, because we know that the revival has been rewritten by Harvey Fierstein, and I wonder if some of that, like, South loathing has been taken out, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It will be interesting. This rewritten book...
Mm-hmm.
I would assume one is that it makes it so that it's not, hopefully that the side characters maybe have a bit more to do, because they have a wonderful cast for these characters, but so that it doesn't feel like so much is resting just on one character, that it's a bit more fleshed out, and just given everyone a little bit more depth. But yeah, two, maybe just kind of developing the love story a bit more, so you understand why Fanny like leaves the Follies to go marry Nick when he hasn't even invited her.
But maybe that was also us being like, this guy is sketchy, he's gonna die.
No, no, but like, even the other girls were like, did he ask you to come?
No, they were the only people that were making sense. And I do want to point out that this movie, and I feel movie musicals typically tend to be this way, but I feel like also these are dated. The way that I predicted the exact moment of Don't Run on My Parade, down to the lyric.
Don't tell me.
Don't tell me not to live, just sit and putter. Life's candy and the sun's a ball of butter. Don't bring around a cloud to rain on my parade. Don't tell me not to fly, I simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Who told you you're allowed to rain on?
It happened exactly as I thought it was going to. But that's the moment where everyone in the Follies is like, girl, what are you doing? Like, why are you going over to Europe? Are you sure that he even wants you to go to Europe with him? And that's when we were like, he doesn't. Something bad's gonna happen. Nothing bad happened. They just like...
No, not then, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, the worst that happened was he goes to jail and they get divorced and then she sings an amazing song. So speaking of songs, because the songs are different in the movie than they are in the musical, a couple of them at least, what is your favorite song from the movie?
Okay, my favorite song from the movie. This is hard because so many... They all serve different purposes, but the moment where I was like, wow, Barbara is probably my man right at the end.
Agree.
I'll go away when I know I'll come back on my knees someday for whatever my man is. I am his
You know, it kind of, a lot of, I was thinking about the movie A Star Is Born a lot watching this movie, which is also probably why I thought he was going to die. But I was thinking about the movie A Star Is Born.
And also Barbara was in one of the iterations
Barbara
of A Star Is Born.
Which I haven't seen either. Another
either.
Blind spot.
We've seen the, obviously, Lady Gaga one.
The Gaga version. But that moment where she's singing My Man is kind of reminding me of the moment at the end of A Star Is Born where she kind of goes and sings like a lament about her relationship. And you're just like, vocals. And this song is gorgeous. And I learned that it was a Fanny Bryce song that they added to this movie. Is this song in the musical? No.
It is not.
Which is crazy to me. It's a different finale, right?
The finale is Who Are You Now? Which, again, we watched the Glee episode where Rachel sings this and she says like that it's about... She thinks about Finn when she sings this. So we get her emotional version. And then we also get that, like, spliced with Jane Lynch having, like, a comedic version of this song.
Right. Coach. What was her character's name?
Sue Sylvester.
Wow. That was in the back of my mind. How could I ever forget? But it kind of occupies the same space as My Man. Just kind of a look back on a relationship that's come to an end. And, you know... in the musical and in the way like Rachel Berry sings it, it wasn't their choice for that relationship to come to an end. So it's like very bittersweet.
Who are you now?
And then the other difference there is that the musical ends with Don't Rain on My Parade reprise, where the movie just ends with My Man. But watching the movie and not knowing at the time, obviously had listened to the musical cast recording after the movie, that I was like, we're really going to end on a downer like this? This is Funny Girl. Like, don't we need a big finale moment? And I still don't know that we actually get a big finale moment because the reprise is still somewhat slow. So,
sure.
Get ready for me, world, cause I'm a comer. I simply gotta march, my heart's a drummer. Nobody, no, nobody is gonna rain on my parade.
I don't know. I'm like kind of concerned for this production.
I mean, it was clearly a success the first time, but it also hasn't been revived. And I think the big concern in not reviving it is this role is so tied to Barbara. It's so tied to her identity and her performance that without her in it, is it good? Was her talent disguising an extremely flawed show?
Right. I mean, so this iteration, I do think it has changed again, but it was seen on stage in 2018 in the West End.
It was the Meunier Chocolate Factory production, I believe.
And then it transferred, I think, because it was nominated, because I was looking this up, Sheridan Smith, who played Fanny in the West End, oh, sorry, I think it was the 2017, because she was nominated for an Olivier for Best Actress in a Musical, and Funny Girl was nominated for Best Musical Revival that year. But you know what else was that year? Because I was in London. Dreamgirls. Amber Riley won Best Actress.
Wow, there's so many Glee connections always to this show.
Yes, and also the Best Musical Revival that year was the Jesus Christ Superstar Regent Park Open Air, which is the production that I'm obsessed with that came to Mervish. Like, wow. It's an all full circle moment. But
so it didn't transfer. It just is the Meunier Chocolate Factory.
The Olivier's is like...
The Olivier's is much more open. Yeah. Because they're not so rigid. They reward opera. They reward dance. But yeah, so it played at the Meunier Chocolate Factory production, who always does kind of fun things. It's a 180-seat off West End theater, which is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine seeing it so small.
If anyone wants to watch it, it's on Broadway HD right now and YouTube. So it filmed, like, not a bootleg. It's actually a filmed production of this Funny Girl. So this version, as I said, book revised by Harvey Fierstein and then directed by Michael Mayer. And these are the two that are coming over. No one else is coming over with the Broadway show. But while I was looking this up, I remembered and then found an article that there was supposed to be a Funny Girl revival on Broadway with Bartlett Scheer directing. And who'd you say? Bobby Cannavale?
Bobby Cannavale and Lauren Ambrose, who went on to do My Fair Lady with Bartlett Scheer.
Yes. And then it
I
was
think Bobby Cannavale. I mean, I love Bobby Cannavale. Love Bobby Cannavale. Yeah. That would have been interesting. Hasn't Lady Gaga talked about doing a Funny Girl revival? There's always rumors about the Funny Girl revival. And it seems like this is the only time it's ever actually happened. A note that I saw about Sheridan Smith, who played Fanny Bryce in the Meunier Chocolate Factory production, is that she had her own take on Fanny, and it didn't seem like a Barbara imitation.
Which I think is super important.
Yes, because you're going to pale to Barbara. You are always going to pale. So I think being able to bring yourself to that character instead of being so beholden to this iconic performer in that role is much better. And we'll see what Beanie does, because I don't think she's a Barbra Streisand type at all. So I'm very curious to see what she does, because I'm excited for her because she is funny. She is a comedian. Mm-hmm. Like, she has the humor for sure. So I think she can definitely bring that. But yeah, obviously vocally, she's not Barbara.
I know. This was the thing. As we were watching last night and Barbara singing My Man, we both were like, over Senior, does Beanie have this? I don't know if Beanie has this. And I agree with you. I think thinking back to the movie and thinking like the greatest star, she'll kill it. She'll do that one so well. Any of the scenes where like Fanny's on stage doing these comedy numbers, she'll kill it. People.
I can already picture her. She's already making me laugh in my mind.
But then we get to People. I'm like, okay, huge song. Huge song. Mm-hmm. This is not a show that has like one big song. This is a show that has like three or four big songs. So we have People. Then we have Don't Rain on My Parade. I'm like, great. The first part of this song, she'll nail it with the comedy. But when we get to those final notes, like, I'm a little concerned for Beanie. And I know that because when Go ahead.
When people are in the audience, they want those big notes.
I know. This is the thing. I think my biggest worry here is the comparisons. I think that's my worry, is that it's going to be, you know, she will bring her own thing to this, which she very well should. But there is always going to be, especially with a huge name like Funny Girl, there's going to be people sitting in the audience being like, that's not the vocal performance that I thought I was here for. That's not Barbara Streisand. And that's my biggest worry, is that she is not Barbara Streisand, and people are not going to be able to separate the two, vocally at least. My other concern is
we have many concerns for something we literally know nothing about, but this is what our podcast is. Okay, go on.
My other concern is that, as you said, I'm also hoping that the side characters have more things to do, because absolutely, why would you cast Ramin in a musical and not have him sing? Obviously, it's not going to be that. But my concern is that he is one of the most powerful singers out there. And I'm afraid that he might overpower her in these duets. Like, sure. I'm interested to see their dynamic. We've been given like a taste, a teeny bit of some like behind the scenes Funny Girl videos on their Twitter. And they seem to have like cute chemistry. But like, this is a freaking Jean Valjean in Phantom of the Opera. Like, he can sing. So I'm a little worried about, like, the two of them together. But yeah, like, concerns for a show that we haven't seen. But I think they're, like, kind of real concerns.
We know nothing. It's true, because his voice is so rich. I think in some ways it'll be a great contrast between their characters, because his character is much more serious, much more mysterious. And her character is bubbly and light. And they're, as a couple, very contrasted. So that could work really well. But there's like one duet in the movie, basically.
Yes.
There's more probably on stage, but
we do know that a song that wasn't in the movie, which is A Temporary Arrangement, is back in this version of the musical, which is a solo song for Nick Arnstein, because in the movie, I think he sings for maybe like a minute, if that.
It's very brief. It's very brief.
And he's kind of like talk singing, so it's not really...
Yeah, I don't know if Omar Sharif is known as a singer.
No. Whereas again, like as I said, you cannot cast Ramin in this show and expect him not to open his mouth and sing, because what a tragedy that would be. So that is for sure a solo. And then we know that they sing, because it's in the movie and the original musical, You Are Woman, I Am Man, which is when they're like falling in love, I would say, kind of for the first time.
Does it take more explanation than this? You are woman, I am man, let's kiss.
Of nonchalance, furnishing a bed in restaurants. Well, a bit of dinner never hurt, but guess who is gonna be dessert? Do good girl.
I was watching a little bit of a video today. Mm-hmm. It was a channel called Staged Right, and they were talking about how that song was originally just a Nick Arnstein song. And I believe it was Jerome Robbins' idea to have Fanny Brice come in with like comedy lines to undercut what he was saying, and like kind of bring you into what she's thinking while he's saying all this to her. And they were saying, you know, that was such a like a smart directing, producing choice for this movie and for the storyline, to kind of give you that insight into what she was thinking. So I thought that was a really, really interesting way.
So like that scene when she's performing and meets him for the first time, and then it literally freezes and she's like, Nikki Arnstein, Nikki Arnstein. We were like, what's happening?
Like, excuse me? Oh, that was funny. That was funny. Wow, I forgot about that.
That was great. And then the other song that was in the original Broadway, which is I Want to Be Seen With You Tonight, is again another duet for them. And then you said that you're looking at the West End cast, or sorry, so like song list right now.
For Revival Productions, it says, I'm looking at their list of duets. So we've got between Fanny Brice and Nikki Arnstein, I Want to Be Seen With You Tonight, You Are a Woman, and Who Are You Now in Act Two.
Which I believe, I mean, we just mentioned it earlier, like Lea Michele sings this by herself, and also on the original Broadway cast recording, it's just listed as Barbra Streisand.
It's, you know, it's just Babs. It's just Babs.
So, but even yeah. Still, thinking about this, like, 2-hour and 20-minute show, and he's only going to sing 3 songs? No.
It's very much a Barbra vehicle. It's very much a Fanny Brice vehicle.
And this leads me back to our Way Too Early Tony nominations episode where I said that he's going to land in feature instead of lead for this very reason.
What did I say? Did I say
you
lead?
You said lead. But I also feel like you took he never made it into the final list because, as we know, 2 celebs.
He might not have made it into the final list. Wow. Okay, let me take a look at my very, very important list. No, I put him in lead, but he didn't make my list.
Yeah.
But he did make my list.
Who did you take out? He did not make your list.
Maybe he didn't make my list. No, I crossed him out. You're right. He didn't make my list.
I was like, should we roll the tape? We can roll the tape.
I have either, to fill this final spot, Billy Crystal or Ramin Karimloo. So Billy Crystal for Mr. Saturday Night.
There is no competition on your list. It's free. It's Billy Crystal. Like, it has to be.
Or Ramin in Funny Girl. I know. This is so hard. I'm going to pick that Billy Crystal is going to be nominated and Ramin is going to be left on the cutting room floor is what's going to happen here.
That's why I said for his own, like, success here on a nomination, he's hoping that they put him in feature. But someone that did make your list on my list, Jared Grimes.
Jared Grimes is my featured actor. My featured actor.
Yes. He's playing, like, Fanny's best friend slash, I don't know, something. He's barely in the movie. Like, barely.
Right. Something that's in the musical, the stage production that's not in the movie, is tap dancing. And I think that's where he's going to really get to shine. But did not have that opportunity. That character does not have that opportunity in the movie.
And
really, that movie is tailored to Barbara.
100%. Because I was going to say, like, the other character, her mother, Rose... Mm. Played by Jane Lynch, like, you're not going to cast Jane Lynch in a musical and not have her do anything. So I'm sure there's a lot more for her as well. But just to touch more on the West End production, which again is really our only vehicle into the Broadway revival. Ben Brantley, I guess, flew to UK to see this show because I assume, again, we are newbies to this, but I think as soon as Funny Girl is listed anywhere, people are like, I gotta see this show. So I'm sure critic-wise, they were like, gotta go.
That was kind of the first big revival production. There's obviously been regional productions of it, and it always attracts actresses. Like, I feel like a New York actress would be willing to travel to a smaller market to play Fanny Brice and Funny Girl, but that Many a Chocolate Factory production was the first major production since 1964. So, of course, was it going to attract attention?
And he liked it. He didn't love it. But he did say that, which I think is kind of interesting, especially in talking about, like, the beefing up of these side roles. He said that, like, Sheridan Smith had the entire show on her shoulders.
Still?
Yeah.
Still.
Which is, I think, like, another... My other worry, this is an episode full of worries from me, is that... 8 shows a week, I don't know, is sustainable for Beanie.
It's something we've been talking about, that when a show is so held on one actor, when they're in almost every song, every scene, that's a lot to put on one actor. And then when you're casting a star, you know, you don't want them to be out very much because you're advertising using their name. Vocally, that's very taxing. Physically, it's very taxing on a performer. So yeah, it's, is it a sustainable show to do 8 times a week? I don't know.
But In all honesty, is any show at this rate sustainable to do 8 times a week?
A wonderful, great question. No, truly.
Well, this is like a side topic, but I was watching Ricky from Moulin Rouge still does live videos like every so often of like their backstage like antics. And Aaron and Tam and Ricky were all talking about Les Mis and how Jean Valjean is not a sustainable role for one show. They were like, imagine doing a Saturday matinee. Like, how do you even get up there vocally? So the fact that like these three guys that perform 8 times a week in, I would say, like a vocally taxing show, Moulin Rouge, have these opinions of like theater in general, I don't know. I worry about like someone like Beanie, who obviously is coming off of like last time she was on Broadway was Hello Dolly, which was now like a few years ago. So to come from
famously, that show had a Tuesday alternate. Famously, yes. Bette Midler did not do all 8 shows.
Well, and also think back to like the good old days of Dear Evan Hansen when, you know, Ben Platt performed 8 times a week and then they were like, never
burnt
again.
Him out. Burnt
never
him out.
Again. Yeah, because by the time ABF did it, I think he was only doing like 6 because they were like, this is not sustainable for anyone. So yeah, I wonder, I mean, there is an understudy. Beanie does have an understudy, but they haven't said anything about
the performance schedule, if it's going to be 8,
and I don't
7,
think they
6.
Will until after opening because
sure.
They're waiting for obviously opening to finish so that they can put in their bids for the Tony Awards.
Because unfortunately, there is still kind of sometimes bad press around using an alternate.
100%.
When there shouldn't be, because, you know, think about the opera schedule. Operas only go 3-4 times a week. They're not performing 8 times a week the way that Broadway is. And the way that Broadway has evolved to the more modern, everyone is belting. Everyone is singing so, so high. I mean, funny to talk about a revival of a 6-year-old show and say that, but the way that the shows have evolved has become less and less sustainable for performers.
Mm-hmm. And also, just to throw in a pandemic on top of all of that, like
sure.
Going back to a full 8 times a week schedule after 2 years off is very difficult. But
it is a muscle that you work and then that was kind of let rest for 2 years and you have to build it back up.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I wonder, but I always wonder what will happen there with that. But yeah, I'm like, I don't know. I'm a little concerned for this production. I do think that it's obviously, it will, like, it's selling well at this very moment.
Sure.
It is selling well. It is name recognition. I think it's really interesting, and we've said this before, to have a show like Music Man and Funny Girl in the same season. To me, that's two scores that are like quite similar in terms of the instruments that are used and two very expensive pits. So if you are going to either of those shows, you're in for, I feel like, an amazing orchestra experience as well, which is really
absolutely
exciting.
Which, again, something you don't get all the time. As orchestras keep being cut down smaller and smaller and smaller to save money, Music Man and Funny Girl have big pits. That sounds
I think
funny.
About the Phantom. I always think about the Phantom when we talk about
sure.
stuff like that, because I remember that was one of the first things that came out when West End said, you know, Phantom's coming back, and Cameron McIntosh was like, we're slicing that orchestra to
right.
like 17 musicians, which is shocking to me because that show, I feel like,
that's still huge. 17
there.
Is still bigger than
totally,
most shows.
It's still huge, but you know, to think of like Phantom without the full experience, I couldn't imagine. So I do hope, as much as we can like laugh about the 5-minute in full black orchestra in the overture in this movie, I would give anything to sit in a theater and hear a huge overture like that.
I've spoken about it before, but one of the most special moments in a theater was when I saw the Bartlett Shear revival of My Fair Lady at Vivian Beaumont. And at the top of Act 2, the entire orchestra was on stage and they like wheeled themselves out and you could see every single person and they got to play on stage for everyone. And it was thrilling. And also because where we were sitting, it was like Eliza Doolittle coming down the stairs, but we didn't have a good vantage point of the stairs, but we were directly facing that orchestra. And so to see, not only to hear them, but to see every single person in that orchestra, and it was a big band, so special. And I think we kind of do lose that a little bit with newer shows, especially because a lot of it is digital.
Yeah.
You're able to create sounds with a keyboard, it is special to have a string section, a brass section, just so many different instruments in the pit. So that's a big benefit of having these revivals.
Totally. I do want to talk about Michael Mayer for a second, because he is directing this, and I think it's an interesting choice. What are your thoughts on Michael Mayer and this production?
Well, you know, Michael Mayer is special to me because he obviously directed Spring Awakening. So that's my first introduction to him. He also did American Idiot. So kind of in that same vein. So I always think of him as a very kind of stripped down director.
The most recent Little Shop that we saw.
Sure. And that maybe not necessarily stripped down, but felt a little grungy. You know, it was a small space. He also did Head Over Heels. He also did the recent Hedwig. So, grunge. Again, that's a grungy one. Head Over Heels, that feels like an outlier to me. I don't know. So he's done a lot of things. I generally like Michael Mayer. I generally think he does good work. And we saw that Little Shop is a very classic revival of Little Shop. If you are picturing a production of Little Shop to the book, it's that one. And so that makes me think that this Funny Girl will be... to the book will be the best looking production of Funny Girl. It's not going to shock us with any choices. You know, it's going to be very standard. That's not necessarily bad, but it's not going to be like an absolutely brand new visual take on Funny Girl.
But I also think that that would, I mean, speaking from experience of seeing the 2020 ill-fated West Side Story, I don't think changing Funny Girl to be avant-garde is a good choice. Funny Girl.
Eva went home as Funny Girl with the rain and the, like, cameras on stage and, like, war masks. Picturing it. I'm visualizing.
Did you want to talk about choreography at all?
I am really excited about the choreography of this new revival. It is a different choreographer than the West End version, but it's Eleanor Scott, who I know from being on Something in Dance. She worked as the associate choreographer on Head Over Heels. She works with Spencer Lyth a lot. And she did Little Shop and is now making her Broadway debut choreographing this Funny Girl. And there's also a separate tap choreographer whose name is escaping me right now.
That's fun though.
But yeah, which I love they brought in a tap specialist, because when you have a show with tap, you want, and you cast actors like Jared Grimes, who are great tappers, you know, I want them to be doing interesting, fun things. So I'm excited to see what they do, and especially seeing like the fun musical numbers in the movie, kind of, it'll be interesting to see how that translates to the stage and to see how they modernize those things.
And also, speaking of like transferring to the stage, David Zinn doing those sets. So
great.
I think we can expect big, probably traditional, but like big sets from him. So that's exciting too.
Yeah. It's going to be, I think, a big classic revival. I don't think it's going to shock us in any way. I don't think it's going to shock anyone in any way. But it's going to be, you know, with Music Man, those reviews, a lot of them were, this feels a little bit stale. This feels a little bit unnecessary. And do we think Funny Girl's going to kind of run into the same problem? And it's been revived far less. We've seen it far less than Music Man for sure. But yeah. I don't know. Is it what we need right now?
No, but I do think that Funny Girl has a less problematic storyline than Music Man 2.
Sure.
And, I mean, you all know my thoughts on Hugh Jackman. I would prefer to see Beanie than Hugh shine on
Absolutely.
Stage,
so. But that's I don't know if the regular person is like, yeah, Beanie Feldstein over Hugh Jackman.
No, the regular person is like, I'm going to Music Man.
I'm seeing Hugh Jackman. Well, I mean, they can't afford Music Man, but they're like, I would go to Music Man.
Exactly, yeah.
But, and again, must reiterate, these are our opinions before the show has even had a single preview. These are just our takes.
And also after watching Funny Girl for the first one time ever.
And I think that makes us experts.
The real question, do you think, and we actually have no idea what the answer is, do you think that Barbara was like in on any of the audition process? You were saying to me last night that you think that Beanie was like offer only for this. And I would agree. But do you think that they consulted? I know that it's not like her story, but it is like so close to her and like made her a star that I'm just curious.
I do not feel she's involved in any way. I feel like, and when I say Beanie's offer only, I feel like it's like they call her agent and they're like, we're going to bring her in for a meeting. We're going to have a work session and they're going to sing at the piano with the songs.
Yeah, it's like the Daniel Radcliffe Merrily We Roll Along that was on Dumas right. for months and now it's actually happening.
Oh my God, Dumas knew. But it's like, it's not like, you know, where they're having a bunch of appointments in the day. They're like, okay, who do we see? And we think it's going to be this person and they kind of like work together with them. I don't think it was a traditional audition process.
No, I mean, we knew, I think, like, thinking back to the end of last year, we knew that Beanie was cast, or we had heard, like, rumors that she was cast, and we heard that the Nick Arnstein had also been cast. And then there was that, like, random rumor that
there was like there was, like, casting notice, and
they were not.
It was all characters except for Fanny Bryce and Nick Arnstein. So we were like, okay, and then the rumors kind of coalesced around Beanie Feldstein. And then we figured out Ramin, and then they announced it, but we all knew.
The way that we were shocked that Ramin was even in the conversation, because I just think, like, obviously he lives in London, coming back to New York, like, you would not do something unless, or he would not do this unless it was worth his time.
He's not going to be away from his family unless it's a starring role.
Yeah.
Unless it's something like Funny Girl.
I don't know. I'm like, I don't know. And I don't even know if we'll get to see it, but I'm like a little concerned. Like maybe, I feel like maybe, but I'm excited to read opening night preview reviews. I'm excited to see like a picture, a curtain call, a something.
Absolutely.
Because
I want to see
our
her.
Main question was like, what's the hair going to be? What's Beanie's hair going to be?
Oh my God. We could talk for hours about Barbara's hair in this movie. It's so beautiful.
But how much like
we think
the
it was a wig? How much was a piece?
Yeah. So, but then looking at the, like, again, the Glee episode, but also the West End version, I don't think the hair is going to be as, like, big.
No, as Barbara.
As Barbara's, but I'm interested in the wig department of this show for sure. Also because Amber Ardolino, who
I was going to say a good TikTok follow, Amber Ardolino. Yes,
she has been sort of like vlogging the whole process through. And I know that she got fitted for wigs. So they're making like new wigs for her. They all got new shoes. The other day she had posted a video of the Sitz probe, which was like super exciting. So there's some like really good ensemble people in this show too. There's
for sure.
Like people from shows currently on Broadway were like taken and placed into this. So I do think it's like, it's a pretty, I would say in comparison to like a Music Man, the ensemble sizes are probably around the same size. I feel like it's a big show.
Yeah, it's grand and it's going to feel grand.
Before we jump into obsessions, final thoughts on your first viewing of Funny Girl?
My final thoughts is Barbara Streisand is a star. And I know this is known, like this is not new information, but to finally watch her star-making role and to be like, of course people saw this and were like, she is a star. And it makes me very interested to see, is this movie so well-regarded because of her, or can it stand on its own without her?
Yes, I would agree with that. I also think that if you have not seen Funny Girl and you're sort of like interested in maybe like one of the first behind the scenes takes of like a movie musical, because I feel like there's a lot of stuff in this movie of behind the scenes of how to put a show together.
Sure.
Watch this, because it's so interesting to see the business side back in the 60s and all of that take place. But yeah, like if you're looking for a masterclass performance by an actress, this is the only movie that you should watch, because wow.
She says, I'm the greatest star, and she is right.
She meant it.
She is correct.
Yeah, so that's our thoughts on Funny Girl. If you happen to be in New York, go see Funny Girl and let us know, because I'm super interested to hear what it's actually like.
And the movie was just available on Netflix. We watched it over Scener, so it's very readily available in Canada anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure it's available on Netflix in the States too. Yeah. And with that being said, it is now time for our obsession of the week.
So my obsession this week, I was listening to a podcast that I love, Keep It, with Ira Madison III, and they had Kristen Chenoweth on as a guest. This is the episode from March 9th. So I would recommend listening to it. She does a great interview. They're clearly big fans, and she is like, it's a wonderful interview. But she was talking about her album For the Girls, where she did covers of theater songs, non-theater songs, just kind of like songs sung by women. And she has a lot of features on the album. She has Ariana Grande singing You Don't Own Me with her. She sings I Will Always Love You with Dolly Parton. So the song that is my favorite from the album is I'm a Woman, which is written by Lieber and Stoller. And the exciting part of it is on the album, it features Jennifer Hudson and Reba McEntire.
Wow. So
three iconic performers.
I can make a dress out of a baby, make a man out of you.
Can you think of a weirder group of three? Kristen
Chenoweth, but as soon as you
Reba McEntire, Jennifer Hudson.
All I thought was, a single mom.
Single mom. absolutely. I've always loved that song. And to hear these three vocalists sing it, these three, you don't think their voices should work together, but they do. It's so, so much fun. The whole album is really fun because Kristen is just an amazing performer. And something she was talking about in the interview on Keep It is that she feels it's important to sing like older theater standards at her concerts because a lot of younger theater fans are watching her and seeing her sing these things and not knowing where they came from. And so
I love that.
She wants to keep this music alive. She said when she was on Glee, so much Glee today. So when she was on Glee, she sang Maybe This Time. And someone messaged her being like, I love that song they wrote for you on Glee. So we didn't know it was from Cabaret. And which is crazy.
I like that I'm shocked because literally we didn't know like, any song for Funny Girl 24 hours ago.
But something like Glee, and I think Kristen thinks it's so important to continue to sing these songs, like Maybe This Time, like I'm a Woman, so that more and more people can hear them and know about the history of theater and these songs. So a really fun album to listen to. She's also always a good time, a good interview, yeah. So much fun. Mm-hmm. So definitely would listen to that episode of the podcast, but also check out her album For the Girls and the song I'm a Woman.
Wow. But still, can't believe Reba, Jennifer Hudson, and her all on one song together. Like,
crazy.
How... I mean, I feel like Kristen ventured into, like, the country music scene, so that kind of makes sense to me. And I guess she just knows Jennifer Hudson from, like, the industry. But, like,
around.
To pitch it to the two of them, and everyone was like, yes. Love it.
Yeah.
Okay, my obsession this week is, like, a bittersweet one. This cast recording just came out, and I really think that for a long time, we thought that we were going to see The Assassins off-Broadway.
Wow.
And we never did.
Devastation.
And now it's closed, and it was a limited run. And I will say I am, like, so thankful that this cast recording exists, but at the same time, listening to it, I was like, the magic that we could have witnessed on stage and never actually did.
It's bittersweet. It's bittersweet.
It's, like, 2 years to the day, basically, when this episode is released, that we would have been, like, in the audience to see Assassins. Anyway, the 2022 off-Broadway cast recording came out very recently. If you have not listened to it, go listen to it. This is actually my first listen through. Wow, it's a whole newbie episode of Assassins. I've never listened through to the entire cast recording.
You were trying to stay fresh before us seeing it.
Exactly.
And then obviously we didn't get to see it.
And also, we had talked about that, like, Shawfest was supposed to bring it, and now they're also not bringing it. So,
yeah, it was
are we ever
going to
see Assassins?
We're never going to see it. We're never going to see it.
Yeah. Anyway, I would say that this is not, like, a traditional version of Assassins, because this is a completely reorchestrated version of this show. Looking at some of the pictures, again, this is me being like, wish we saw this. It's like the band was on stage with all of the actors. Like, there's a video of Ethan Slater. I think Ethan Slater, like, played guitar as part of the band for the entire show, because he sort
of, like, he's the balladeer.
Yeah, so he was playing guitar, like, the whole way through, but then I saw a clip of him singing, and the, like, flute player was lying on her back wearing, like, a prison jumpsuit playing the flute. It looked so cool. It reminded me of, like, you know, the sexy Oklahoma, as everyone would call it. Like, that's what it feels like. But this cast is stupid. Like, it is a stupid, talented cast. And listening to the full recording, I texted you and I was like, Stephen Pasquale, like, anytime he is on a cast recording, his voice just soars above everybody else. It's outrageous the way that you can just, like, pick him out. Another person who soars, Will Swenson. Oh my God, like, crazy. So the song that I want to talk about today is Gun Song. I had never heard this song before. Mm. I will say, if you are jumping into this cast recording for the first time, I do not recommend listening to it in a car because there are gunshots and you might get scared. It's, like, pretty jarring. They come out of nowhere. So maybe,
it's
like,
called Assassins.
I know, but I wasn't expecting actual, like, firing of gunshots on the recording. I was at home, so it was fine. But this song is sung by Brandon Uranowitz, Will Swenson, Judy Kuhn, and Stephen Pasquale. Like,
excuse me?
Can we? Anyway, there's a moment of the song at the very end where they do this four-part harmony, and it is ridiculous.
Slow them down to a crawl.
Show them all,
big and small. It took a little finger, no time to change the world.
Like, these are some of the most talented people on stage. And to hear them sing together, crazy. Another standout, you know, we love them, Adam Chandler Brett and Tavi Gevinson.
Our faves, Gossip Girl stars.
Unworthy Love, Gossip Girl stars. Wesley Taylor is in this show. So many highlights on this cast recording. I would say the opening, really good. The closing, which is the same song, basically. Everybody's got the right reprise. And then obviously, like, again, as I said, Stephen Pasquale, Ballad of Booth. It's stupid good. It's so good. But the song that I'm obsessed with is Gun Song. So, yeah, maybe sometime in my life I'll get to see Assassins on stage, but not today.
It's been a misconnection with us and Assassins with that, between that off-Broadway revival, because we couldn't get down to New York because of the pandemic, between Shaw Festival canceling their shows, and then we couldn't even find a trace of information about it on the internet.
Until there was actually, we will not get into this, but there was quite a controversy on this Niagara Falls production of Assassin.
And now we're just like, will we ever see it? Because now I feel like Shaw's never going to touch it again.
No, Shaw will never touch it. And I feel like Stratford might have, like, secondhand embarrassment from Shaw that they'll never touch it. And you know that Mervish is not bringing it. So I think
it's not going to tour, you know.
Opportunity is to, like, see a regional production in the States. And that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, I was hoping that they would have filmed this off-Broadway to put it...
I think it's really hard to film stuff in New York, just budget-wise.
But, yeah, I mean, remember, like union-wise, Taylor, like,
union-wise.
SpongeBob was flown over to the UK to film that production because they couldn't do it. So, you're right, it's probably too difficult, but...
In terms of they have to pay the performers, which they should be paid, but I think it becomes... debilitatingly expensive to film things on Broadway.
The day that it came out, it also hit, like, number 3 on the iTunes charts, which is
exciting.
Bizarre for an off-Broadway cast recording. So I think there was a lot of, like, hype around it, and rightfully so. And yeah, it's a really good listen. So listen to it all the way through. But that is our episode on Funny Girl. As we said, we were recording this before there is any ounce of a review from the Broadway production, so we cannot wait to read those reviews. And we will be revisiting, I mean, we'll see, but we will be revisiting Funny Girl in our Tony nominations episode in a few weeks. So,
for sure.
We will be talking about it again. But in the meantime, you can listen to any of our other episodes by subscribing to our podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. We would really appreciate it if you left us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And you can also watch us here on YouTube. And don't forget to subscribe.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Off2BOAPodcast. That's the number 2. And you can comment or tweet us what you're excited about Funny Girl, the musical.
And we will see you guys next time.
Bye.